This is the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time for a new episode of Kings of the Podcast. Buckle up, here we go.
Welcome back, Kings of the Podcast, episode 171. Dennis, how are you holding up here today?
I'm holding up well. The hot stove, we did a great job. Thanks for coming on. I've almost had my house cleared out. When you were there, you saw my grandkids were there. Patty was there. My daughter and son-in-law were there. So almost everybody's out of the house except for one guy, Panyota. He's still here in L.A. with me.
So. Oh, well, I didn't know. We could have booked him as a special surprise guest. We could have actually done, no pun intended, a fourth period today and had him on and picked up his thoughts. But yes, Panyota, he was in rare form on Saturday. Hopefully everybody listened to the hot stove. But what was it, an hour into the program, he finally figured out the Kings were playing the Habs? Is that?
Yeah, that was it. He was wondering why there were so many Habs jerseys outside waiting to come in. I'm like, well, they're playing the Canadians. It's probably the reason. I'm not always right, but I think on that one I am.
Yeah. Good guess. Good guess on that one. Good to know that Dave was so plugged in. So a lot of L.A. luminaries stopping by for your hot stove edition there. That was held at DTLA. Is that the name of the restaurant now?
Yes. DTLA Grill and Sushi is what it's
called. And sushi. I did not even know that.
Yeah, it's actually on the wall. I saw it. So yeah.
Ah. I just knew where to go since you told me. I didn't I will admit, I did not look on the wall. I did not know they had sushi. I just thought it was the same old bar and grill that it's always been. Okay, yeah. I'll have to stop in and check out the sushi then.
Okay.
Luke Robitaille came on the program. You also had Jim Fox on the program. Any interesting nuggets from either of those two fine gentlemen?
No, just talking about what's going on with the team, how well they're playing, and talked a little bit about with Luke about getting the team back on Channel 9 for the first time, I think, in 34 years. He says it's really important. He goes, look, there's still 17 million people in this market that do watch TV, and a lot of them watch Channel 9. So we talked about that. And Zach Dooley came on. He was great as well. So, and, you know, we talked with him about specifically about Kopitar and Kempe and Jimmy Fox. We had like more of a big picture discussion, talked a little, certainly about goaltending like everybody else has. But it was really great. The Crypto.com Arena staff was fantastic. They were so accommodating, and technically everything went really, really well. We got to be able to feed the audio into the house speakers, which was great. So it was, you know, we'd love to do it again at some point.
Awesome. And that was your second remote of the year. Is that right? Or was it your third?
That was our second time at DTLA. We did one last year in March. And then we did the week before, we did Boston, the CCM Hockey House. So this was actually a better facility because that was just a private house that we're doing the show from. And, you know, it was quirky. We're upstairs in kind of a little alcove. It wasn't the greatest. This one was great because we had Ethernet connections and everything. So we were treated first class. And like I said, we'd love to come back to it again. We're looking at other options. But, John, there's not a ton of, like, afternoon day games on Saturdays that we can do unless you want to go to, like, Buffalo or Philadelphia. And I'm not sure that in the wintertime we want to do that. We're hoping for a Dallas or a Florida Panthers game, day game, but we're not sure about that going forward. So we'll see.
Well, Dave has a few connections at the league office. Maybe next season they can add that. You know, doing the NHL schedule is complex enough, trying to get the buildings and all the other stuff.
Right.
And then add in maybe a couple of Saturday day games in warm locations at the right time.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, put the request in. That's all you can do, Dennis.
You know, the one thing we thought about doing is maybe doing it from Mullet Arena. That would be interesting. So we'll see.
Okay. I'm not sure that, you know, every time you do this, Dennis, you're pushing your luck for Panyota being up on time to get the program going. So you get to a party city like Tempe.
Yeah, that's true.
I think you're probably really
pushing your luck. Probably do it from Winnipeg instead. You're right. You're absolutely right. Better odds from Winnipeg.
So coming up on the program today, and we've had quite the run of guests recently. We've been hopscotching around talking to different people connected to the world of hockey. We had Rich Seeley on the program, Mike Stutz. We had Isaiah Mustafa. So we've gone a bunch of different directions, and we even have our next guest lined up for another show later this week, which will be a member of the LA Kings, the team itself, an actual player, Dennis.
Right.
But today, on today's program, we have a gentleman coming up. His name is EJ Emery, and you might be wondering, well, who is EJ Emery and why is he on Kings of the Podcast? He is projected to go in the first round of the 2024 NHL draft, which, of course, will be coming up at the end of June of next year. So we're still, what, 7 months away from making that happen. But he is a big defenseman, 6'3", continues to grow. He is, and he has ties to Compton, Dennis. A very interesting story, backstory. His dad played in the CFL, and he holds dual citizenship. He is both Canadian and American. His father is American. His mother is Canadian. And we'll get into that with him during the second period. Talk about that. Talk about just sort of what his thoughts are as he gets ready to embark on this journey to hopefully become a first round draft pick in the National Hockey League. A big kid, like I said, more of a defensive player. From a defensive standpoint, but, you know, like any young player, he's continuing to work on his offense. And I'm sure he'll tell us or want to tell us that, you know, that's emerging and that's there's still more of that to come. So we'll get into that in the second period. EJ Emery. And by the way, Dennis, the way that this guy even showed up sort of on my radar, I don't know if you're aware, but Craig Button, I'll have to send you the tweet. Craig Button retweeted a video a few months back.
The workout video?
Yeah, the workout video.
Holy
where
yep.
I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. And when you see the video, you're like, "Well, wait a minute, who is this guy? What's the story here?" And so, quite interesting. So, look,
you can also add, I guess, athletic to another adjective to describe the when the kid from a stand. That was from a standing start. He made that jump, right?
I mean, yeah, pretty much. And boom, he makes that jump. So a great leaping ability, very athletic. And, you know, like we've seen with so many of these young players, Dennis, they just continue to work out. They continue to get better. They continue to train. So looking forward to talking to EJ Emery in the second period. First, though, why don't we handle our business here in the first period? And Dennis, our last program came on Thanksgiving Eve. So the Kings have played two games since we last spoke on the air. If you don't count the hot stove, which we did talk on Saturday, but at least on our show, on the podcast
on our show.
Here, the last podcast came on Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So American Thanksgiving. Thank you. There were two Kings games. There was the road game that took place down in Anaheim. Pretty dominant performance in Anaheim. Would love to get your thoughts on what you saw from the Kings in that game in Anaheim.
I thought that was a huge trap game, John. I thought that the Ducks would be ready and they would push them and it would be a 4-3-5-4 game. It wasn't. It was even a 2 and it was only 2-0 after one. They just were never in the game. They got one goal. Goose got a goal at 4-1, but that was I think it was more surprising from a Ducks standpoint than a Kings standpoint, because the Kings were they showed and on behind that the way they suffocated Montreal, they have the ability to play that type of game. I just thought better from them. Now, the Ducks, they lost again to Edmonton and got blown out last night. So they've lost six straight. So that feel-good feeling when they were, what, 8-1-1 in the 10 streak, it's now reverting back to what you saw last season. So, but, John, that was a dominant performance. And obviously you heard Kings fans, so that wasn't a surprise. But the degree of which they really dominated the first 45 minutes, to me, was kind of stunning.
Now, Cam Talbot, you and I had spoken. We thought going into it that Cam Talbot would get the start versus Anaheim, and then you would most likely play Phoenix Copley against Montreal. That's exactly what happened. Perhaps the most intriguing thing, Dennis, and again, we're talking about things on the margin because the top two lines are pretty much set.
And,
you know, top two defensive pairings are pretty much set. But a very interesting move by Coach Todd McClellan, in the sense that he normally does not like to change his lineup coming off of a victory.
Mm-hmm.
However, he flipped two of his wingers. Carl Grundstrom, sort of funny, if you think back a couple of weeks ago, I put that tweet out there talking about I thought that Grundstrom should be moved up off the fourth line onto the third line, and you know, was ridiculed by some at the time for saying it because Todd was praising the fourth line so much at that time. But he decided to move Carl Grundstrom up 2 weeks later, I guess. So maybe he was going back and reading old tweets. I'm not sure. But Carl Grundstrom up to the third line. And Arthur Kaliev down to the fourth line. And how does Kaliev respond? He scores a goal in the game. So interesting move. Just any thoughts about the flipping of the, if I was going to flip the two wingers, mm-hmm. those weren't the two that I would have done. I thought it would have been Laffey going to the fourth line and putting Grundstrom up on the third line, but instead he flipped 34 down to the fourth line. What'd you think about that?
I think that if we take one step ahead on the chessboard, one move ahead, didn't Kaliev and Lizotte play together a lot last season? They did.
Yes.
Okay, so if Lizzo comes back, you take Jot out of the lineup, that Artie would already be comfortable playing with Lizotte. And does Grundstrom deserve a promotion? Yeah. I mean, what's he going to score now? He's on pace for maybe 20 goals. That would be great to see. So I get your point with respect to moving LaFerriere down because he's a newer player and, you know, his production isn't the greatest. But I go, I say, okay, I get it. Like if he keeps already on that line and Lizotte comes back, yeah, he hasn't played with Trevor Lewis, but he's definitely played with Lizotte. So that could that be more sustainable than just one game? It could be, but we'll see once Lizzo comes back from injury.
Interesting. This is why I love talking to you about these type of things, because you came at it from one perspective, and my thought mm-hmm. was coming at it from a different perspective. I thought that the move was more about wanting to keep Laffey with PLD and mm-hmm. just thinking about the fact that, you know, they've been maybe developing some chemistry
sure.
and or that they're – not that Kaliev wasn't, but just that Laffey mm-hmm. and Dubois might be complementing each other
yep.
More so, let's say. So that's interesting that I was thinking more about Laffey in this particular
sure.
case and you were thinking about Kaliev. Mm-hmm. And who yep. knows? Todd might tell us that, you know, it's a little bit of a combination of both. So he not only made that move on – Friday, but he kept that line together going into Saturday. But Kevin Fiala scored two goals in that game, Dennis. Of course, Kopitar scored against the Ducks. That's
yeah.
They've even taken that off the board in Vegas. They don't.
They should be right.
Yeah,
unless they want to lose money, John, they could leave it on the board. But
yeah, well,
the goal
I
is
don't
to make
think
money.
We make the odds long enough. That's the problem.
Right. Exactly.
So Kopitar passed Mike Modano and became the. He was already the leader among active players with points against the Ducks, but he passed the great Mike Modano, who's, by the way, Dennis, getting a statue
yep.
outside of the arena there in Dallas. And, oh, by the way, Dennis, that game is not just any Dallas Stars game. That happens to be against the LA Kings as well.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, yes, that's awesome. Yes.
So had a brief moment there to connect with Mo a few days ago.
Great.
And pretty awesome for him to get a statue,
oh,
but
yeah.
I digress.
Wonderful.
So Kopitar passes Mike Modano. He scored his first two NHL goals, as I think everybody listening knows by now, against the Ducks in Anaheim. And I think he scored at least one goal in every game he's ever played against the Ducks. At least it feels that way, Dennis.
Exactly. And then the first one didn't he burn Chris Pronger or something like that on his first goal? Something like that. So, of course.
It was definitely a highlight reel situation there in Anaheim. But I think besides the Kopitar goal from a consistency standpoint, Byfield had a goal. Kaliev had a goal, as I mentioned earlier. But Kevin Fiala getting two goals mm-hmm. sort of feels like Fiala's been heating up here over the last week or so.
Yeah, his goal stick's getting hot. And when he scores that type of goal from basically at the goal line, because he can see – you know, Gibson making a move, not covering that certain area. That's what we expect from this player, right? That's what Todd's wanted from this player. You know, minimum amount of stakes. Sure, he's still going to make mistakes. He's still going to make risky plays. But that's the player that we saw last year that for a stretch of about 20 games was a dominant player. And then, like I said, if he gets going and Dubois gets going, you know, look, John, here's the thing. I tweeted this on Saturday. In answer to, you know, my big picture, little picture, small picture, like they're among the elite teams in the league right now. Like, you know, I'm not saying for 82 games, and I know people are going to still question the goaltending, but right now nobody has less regulation losses than this team, right? So, and if they win their games in hand, they'll be in first place. They are among the elite in the NHL right now, which is a great thing to see because it was on display in both games. To be honest, two different ways to win, but now that they're there right now.
Well, I mean, if you just look at two key stats that I think are important to sort of use as confirmation of what you're saying here, Dennis, if you go off of points percentage, which, mm-hmm. you know, we always talk about this, that when you look just at the standings, it can be a little bit confusing because of games in hand.
Sure.
So yep. if instead of looking at points, if you go to points percentage, the LA Kings right now, as we record this podcast on Monday, are sitting at 763, just a tick behind the Boston Bruins, who are at 775. And then, of course, the Rangers running away mm-hmm. with things at 816. So the Kings are ahead of the Vegas Golden Knights on a points percentage basis. So they're the top they're in the top three within the league. Mm-hmm. That would certainly, in my opinion, qualify them as one of the elite teams. The important thing to also look at, Dennis, is the goal differential, because that often dictates how strong your team is and where you're going to be in the standings. And the Kings right now, at one point, Dennis, they were number one, but because I believe Vegas played, this has changed. But the Kings right now are a plus 29.
Yeah.
They are second in the league in goal differential. So you talk about to the Vancouver Canucks, by the way. I think I said Vegas a moment ago, but it's Vancouver's is number one. The point is this, though, Dennis. For all the talk about the goaltending, coming in to the season, we talked about the offense, and it's played out pretty much like expected if you expected the goaltending to be there, in the sense that this is an offensive-minded team who doesn't give up a lot defensively, and with a goal differential that's that strong, Dennis, this team, they're going to beat you, and they're going to put goals on the board, and it's going to be very difficult. You look at the number of shots given up, it's going to be difficult for other teams to come back on them when they can score three, four, five goals in a game.
Yeah, so that allows the goaltending to breathe. Like, if you give up, and to be honest, Sean, I can go back over the last 2-3 weeks. How many bad goals have they given up as goaltenders? They haven't really. I can't think of one, to be honest with you. First of all, they've only given up 5 goals in 5 games, so it can't be that many bad goals, right? This team is just limits the chances. They're going to score goals. I talked to Kopi after the game on Saturday. He goes, wow, man, we score goals. There's no doubt about it. Like, this offense is really clicking on all cylinders. And they, you don't think of them, John, as a shutdown team. But I had some tweets from Montreal Canadiens fan that hated the 1-3-1, that compared this team to a Jacques Lemaire coach team. I'm like, wait a minute. They're like, and I mentioned the second in goal differential, and I think they're first or second in goal scored per game. It's not a Jacques Lemaire team. This is not the Minnesota Wild of, you know, 1999 or wherever they were. So this is a team that is going to outscore their mistakes. And when you could do that, you play with more confidence offensively as well.
Well, Leo Carlson said something interesting in his quote as well after the game in Anaheim about, you know, what did you learn about the LA Kings in this game? And it's like, he said something to the effect of, well, they're going to play their little trap game. And that probably added to that. But Dennis, just go back over the last 10 games and look at the number of goals given up.
Yeah.
Versus Montreal, 0. Versus the Ducks, 2. The Coyotes, 1. The Blues, 1. The Panthers, 1. The Flyers, 4.
4, yeah.
Okay. The Penguins, 4.
Well, 3, because it was overtime, right?
Okay. I'm sorry. Yes, it was overtime, so 3. Vegas, 1. The Flyers, 0. The Senators, 2. The Leafs, 1. Dennis, I'm now going back into October.
Yeah.
So in the month of November, they really turned a switch on around November 1st and started to shut things down. But I liked your word that you used a moment ago, which is breathe. That is exactly what it does. It allows the goaltending to breathe a little bit. And with the few number of shots given up, it allows the goaltender also to sort of settle in a little bit without a frenzy going on in any particular period, which is also pretty helpful.
Yeah, and like with Copley, the Habs had one shot on goal on Saturday. And sometimes that's a challenge to get into the game. But when your team's up and they're just – and they used – the word I used on Saturday, John, they suffocated the Habs. I mean, they're not a good team, right? They're young. They've got some talent. But they're not a good team. They're a bottom of the conference team. They got smothered. They never had a sniff. It was stunning to see that they couldn't – and they had puck possession. But once they got in the offensive zone, they got shut down. And it's something that we haven't seen in a long time with respect to that type of defensive play. That they have certainly, they certainly listened to these coaching staff, right? They have certainly listened and grasped everything that they've taught them defensively, offensively, and it's coming together. And that's why you see the record that they have after 19 games. It's stunning to see, John, but when you watch this team play, like, okay. And they took up that 1-3-1 jump, but in the offensive zone, when they forecheck, they hunt pucks. Like, it's not like they just sit back and sit back and sit back. They're aggressive as well. It's been a really great display of hockey over the last month.
Yeah, Dennis, it is interesting, though, because you used the word trap or the phrase trap game earlier going into that Anaheim game, which is obviously a concern coming out of a mini break they had there over Thanksgiving. But that Montreal game almost could have felt the same way or did feel the same way because it was scoreless for a long time. And at the end of one, Dennis, the game was only 1-0. And you just had that feeling like, ooh, they're just letting Montreal hang in this game long enough. And even at the end of two periods, it was only 2-0. An early goal by Montreal, you know, would have made that a 2-1 game early in the third period and certainly would have made things interesting. The Kings, of course, though, as you said, didn't really allow that to happen because they suffocated them. You had Kevin Fiala picking up a pair of goals on Friday, and then it was back to Trevor Moore again, picking up a pair of goals on Saturday. Trevor Moore, Dennis. Trevor Moore leading the LA Kings.
I think he's on pace for 43 goals. That was hard-working goals, right? The first one that was a wraparound that he knew was in, and that's a funny thing. When the player knows if it's in or not, right? So then, and then the other one was just, it's just, this guy's working really hard. You know he's one of my favorites. I'm happy to see it. But sometimes hard work pays off. And John, remember, go back to the trade. It was Cliffy and Jack Campbell for Moore and the rights to LeFerrier. Pretty decent trade right now.
Well, no, not the rights. No, it was the draft pick.
Oh, draft pick. Yeah,
the Kings actually selected him.
Yes, the pick. So that worked out. That worked out decently for this team.
You know, those were some strong trades during that. You know, once they decided to turn the page, which was December of 2018 is when they decided to turn the page and go through the retool, the recreation of the LA Kings. A lot of good stuff has happened since then, and it's all starting to bear fruit now, which is exciting. I'll tell you what, Dennis, let's talk about the schedule ahead. Let's also talk about goaltending because we're going to have to make some decisions, or at least, McClellan's going to have to make some decisions. We're going to have to evaluate those decisions. Carl Grundstrom, by the way, did pick up a goal in that game against Anaheim.
Yep.
So he was rewarded as well. And then Trevor Lewis, by the way, one of my favorite tweets in quite some time, Dennis, was tweeted out to me on Saturday during the game. It was the Trevor's 3, Habs 0. Fantastic tweet. You know, Twitter can be very annoying, Dennis, but every once in a while, Twitter gold. And that one to me goes in the Hall of Fame, or at least top 10 tweet for the 2023-24 season. So really nice work there. Let's take a quick break. On the other side, we have EJ Emery, who is projected to go late in the first round. And Dennis, I want to leave you with this. In doing research to prepare for this interview, as you know, I love to do, I talked with some scouts, wanted to get some information. And I had one NHL scout tell me this, Dennis, very exciting, caused me to sit up in my chair. He said, I would use my first round pick on EJ Emery right now. If you told me that today I could give up my first round draft pick to get him today, not knowing where we're going to be, obviously, in the standings or in, you know, 1 through 32. But he said, I would draft him right now today and give you my first round pick if I could get EJ Emery. That's how excited one NHL scout was. So made me a little bit more excited to talk to him. Let's see what he has to say on the other side of the break. We'll be back with EJ Emery.
I feel you crumble in my arms down to your heart of stone.
From you, and all I ever asked was for the truth. You showed your tongue and it was forked in two.
Welcome back, second period, and it's never too early to talk about the draft. Now, of course, the draft does not come until next summer, the 2024 NHL draft, but welcome to the program, EJ Emery. And EJ, you are projected to go in the first round. How does that sound almost a year out?
You know, it's always a dream, so it sounds great to me. Just working towards that.
Yeah, that's what most kids your age are trying to do and trying to get to. Let's talk about a couple of things. We'll get into your background. Pretty interesting background with ties here to Southern California as well. We'll talk about that. But two things that we'll just get out of the way right away. You already have initials. So a lot of kids, a lot of hockey players, you know, they get the nickname that's either their initials or you throw a Y on the end of something. You already have a Y on the end. You have all bases covered. Do you have any cool nicknames or everybody just calls you EJ or Ege or something like that?
Yeah, you know, people usually just call me EJ. I got a few Eges in there. You know, E. The few guys on my team call me Esho, but that's about it.
Now, what about numbers? We do a lot of numerology here on Kings of the Podcast, and you were wearing 55 last year. You've switched numbers this year. What is it about 55? And it seems like every young hockey player right now wants to wear 55. There's an ongoing arm wrestle sort of struggle going on in the LA Kings organization. Quentin Byfield has laid claim to 55, much to the disappointment of Brant Clark. But what is it about young players in 55?
That's a great question. I kind of just felt like it was a big, powerful number to choose, and you know, I feel like it kind of represents my game a little bit, gritty.
Okay.
So,
Now this season, you switched numbers. I'm assuming that wasn't by choice. Somebody had strongly suggested or encouraged. Would be my assumption that you moved to a different number.
In the second year of being at the U.S. National Program, we have to have numbers under 35. I just decided to go with number 6.
Well, how did you land upon that number? I'm always fascinated why. What led you to number 6? I'm assuming you weren't a big Steve Garvey fan growing up. That's what I associate number 6 with. Maybe it was Sean O'Donnell in Los Angeles, but what drove you to number 6? And please have a better story than it was the only number available, because those are always boring stories.
Yeah. I was training with, I was in the gym with the Hughes brothers a lot this summer, and I knew all of them were number 6 in the program. And then just going back to LeBron in Miami, it kind of felt like it was, I feel like there's a lot of power in that number, a lot of history, and kind of felt like, just trying to have a season like all three of the brothers did, and obviously LeBron in Miami.
All right, so you mentioned LeBron, Miami, the NBA. I'm assuming then that you're a basketball fan. Are you a sports fan in general? Are you a sports junkie? When you're not on the ice, when you're not training, what are you into?
Yeah, I'm a big sports guy. I grew up playing basketball, football, lacrosse. I ran track. When I'm not really watching hockey or playing hockey, it's usually watching one of those three other sports, those other sports. And yeah, I just love sports in general, to be honest with you.
I'm not a big track guy, so educate me here real quickly. When you say you ran track, are you doing like the short sprints like Usain Bolt in the Olympics, or you're like the cross country guy who runs for like 6 hours?
No, I was definitely the short sprints guy. I ran 100 meters, 200 meters, and then the relays.
All right, so lay it on me. What was your best time in the 100 meters?
Oh, it was back when I was a little bit younger, but it was like 11:10, I believe.
Okay.
If I remember.
I have no point of reference on that. I'm going to have to go back and look it up and see what kind of letter grade we would throw on you for that. But I am going to give you an A+. I'm going to have to send the retweet out for the jump that you did, the leap. I think it was Craig Button who sent that out, and the damn video went viral. You know the video I'm talking about. Tell us about kind of the reaction. I'm sure that day in the gym, you were just working out. You weren't thinking much about it, would be my guess. And next thing you know, that video went viral. You jumped like 17 feet in the air or something ridiculous, like Superman. What happened in the sort of the coming days after that video went viral?
Oh yeah, that video was actually from the summer before, and wasn't really thinking too much about it. Kind of just doing some box jumps, and after that video, kind of phone blew up a little bit. I had to put Do Not Disturb on a little bit, but it was definitely pretty cool to see Craig Button posting that.
Is that the moment that it sort of became real to you? Like we talked a moment ago just about, leading into the draft and things like that. But at a certain point, I'm guessing right now, the draft isn't real. It's still so far away. You still have so much more work to do, so many more hours, in the gym, and games to play and film to watch and all that sort of stuff. But was it at that moment, Craig Button, that you kind of went, wow, like me, NHL draft, we're kind of happening in the same conversation?
Yeah, it's crazy. I just growing up watching every draft, watching all these kids and just like making their dreams come true. And like, it's kind of like, wow, I'm getting talked about by like someone like Craig Button, which is unbelievable, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if you're following this at all. I'm sure you have better things to do, but I don't know if you're following any of the news over the last week or two, but the NHL is getting ready to make a significant change when it comes to the NHL draft. You know, it's historically, like you said, you've watched it all these years. Historically, it's been a big event where all of the teams come. There are fans there. The media is there. The draftees, the prospects are there. Everybody's inside an arena. It was even held here locally in Los Angeles in Staples Center. And everybody's there. And they have voted to go back to sort of the way that it was during the pandemic years, where all the teams stay home and they're in their war rooms, and it kind of just becomes this made for TV event similar to the NFL draft. I think the NBA does it that way too. I'm not sure, but the point is it's not going to be the way that it's always been. And what they're saying is that this coming draft, your draft, the 2024 event, is going to be the last in-person event for everybody. And again, I don't know if you caught the news this week, but the Sphere, which is this big building in Las Vegas, is rumored to be the host arena. So if that ends up happening, it would be pretty fantastic. Now, I know your answer is going to be you don't care where the draft is held, you just want to get selected by a team and all that stuff. But, you know, put all the cliches aside, that would be pretty cool if you were part of the last in-person draft and it was in Las Vegas.
Yeah, for sure. I think that Vegas piece is pretty cool, especially in the Sphere. I've seen some pretty funny videos on that, but I think it being in that Sphere and in Vegas would be a pretty electric place to have a draft like that, and especially it being the last one where everyone's there. That would be pretty cool. Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to see you two at the Sphere in a few weeks, and I will report back to you on if it's a cool building or not, and we can talk about that later. Let's talk about you. Let's talk about your background, because it is interesting. You have dual citizenship, Canadian and American. Your dad, from what I understand, grew up in Louisiana, but he has roots here in Southern California. He grew up in Compton, played college football, eventually went on to play in the CFL. I know, American fans, there is football outside of the NFL. Your dad played in the CFL for 3 years, and that's where you met your mom. Do I have the story right so far?
Yeah, that sounds about right to me.
So tell me about him growing up in Compton. Have you been back? Have you spent any time there? Are you even aware what Compton means? Because here in Southern California, which is where most of our listeners would be from, we're very aware of Compton. Are you aware of Compton?
Yeah, of course. I've been back a couple of times. Have some family gatherings out there, and I think it's definitely interesting hearing, you know, the stories of my dad growing up there, my aunts and uncles just being there, and I think it's special just to have roots that lead back to there.
It's not the safest of areas, so I'm assuming that your dad has some very interesting stories about growing up in Compton.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's obviously he tried keeping his head down a little bit, just playing football and just trying to live life to the fullest. And yeah,
is that the message? You know, from your dad is just, you know, hey, look, son, keep your head down, hard work, it pays off, you'll reach your dreams, you just can't be distracted by, you know, the nonsense that's out there, you know, that that teenagers tend to fall into and get involved in?
Yeah, you know, it's I'm living definitely a dream life right now, where it's I have a chance to achieve a dream that I've had since I was like 3 years old. And he always just told me, you gotta keep your head down and always work, because there's always someone that's either trying to take that dream away, or someone that's trying to have their dream that is yours and take that position away from you. So just constantly just trying to keep grinding and not get distracted by any outside noise or any outside nonsense.
Yeah. Now, he met your mom while he was playing there in the CFL. So tell me about your mom.
Yeah, my mom grew up in British Columbia her whole life. She played soccer in high school for a while, and then she ended up going to Simon Fraser, I want to say, University. And yeah, from there, you know, just entered the work life. She was a sales rep for Nestle for a long time, and then she now works for a company called Transgold. And yeah, my parents met, and now he got me.
Are you a CFL fan because your dad played there, or no, you don't really have any connection to the CFL?
No, not really. I think my dad prefers to watch the NFL more too. So
really?
Not a CFL fan. Yeah.
What would his team be? Is he a Saints fan?
He's a Raiders fan.
Well, of course, growing up in Compton. Yes, I was going back to the Louisiana connection. All right, and what about you? Are you a Raiders fan, or did you pick a different team just to give him a hard time?
Yeah, I was a Seahawks fan.
A Seahawks fan. Well, that's interesting. I guess that would be because they're the closest team to British Columbia?
Yeah. We were able to get down to a few of those games. So, you know, just being a fan of that team.
All right. Well, you and I are not going to talk the NFL then, because I'm a diehard Broncos fan and not the biggest fan of Russell Wilson. So as a Seahawks fan, if you would like to have him back, if I was the general manager, he's available and you can have him. But I digress. So speaking of the LA Kings, you have a family advisor. I don't believe it's officially yet your agent, but Scott Norton from Norton Sports Management. He was previously the agent for Dustin Brown, who took Dustin Brown from, I'll call it, obscurity in upstate New York and took him to the OHL and eventually the first round draft pick. And now there's a statue of him, of course, outside of Crypto.com Arena in downtown LA. So Scott Norton, very influential in Dustin Brown's early career. Is that how you landed with Norton? Was it just the history with Dustin Brown? Is that his calling card?
I thought that was a pretty cool part about it, but, I had a coach growing up named Brad Bowen, and he's connected with Scott Norton. He kind of put me on with Scott a little bit, and yeah, that's kind of from there, the rest is history.
All right, so we'll see if your future has a similar fate to Dustin Brown. Those are big shoes to fill, either with the Kings or with a different organization.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm always intrigued by players that have dual citizenship and the process of selecting one nation to play for. So you are at the U.S. National Training and Development Program, one of the premier places for young athletes at your age to, you know, work on their craft and to try to eventually get drafted by a National Hockey League team. Of course, the program has had wild success here over the last 5 years and the number of players that have been selected from the program. I imagine, you say there's not a downside, but I imagine that maybe some of your buddies that you grew up with, or even some of the haters online, there's some chirping that goes on like, hey, dude, you're Canadian. Why are you playing for the U.S. program?
It's
happened once or twice, I'm sure, right?
a few buddies from back home did give me some chirps, but, you know, at this point, it's I'm all USA, and, you know, I'm ready to go out to war for this country, and, you know, just playing for every day has definitely given me that sense of pride, and, you know, I'm kind of a part of it now, you know?
Yeah. Now, you won gold with the U-17 team, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
So did that solidify everything for you at that point? I mean, not that there may have been a doubt before, but was that like, does that just sort of crystallize everything and you're like, oh, this was so fantastic, I can't wait to do it again, and that's propelling you now?
Yeah, for sure. That U-17 tournament was also in Vancouver, so definitely was kind of like showing everyone that I'm definitely playing for this country now, and all my buddies were able to see that, so yeah.
Now, I talked to a few scouts about you, and the things that come up consistently, incredible athlete, great skater. These are things that come up. You mentioned your dream since you were three. So who put you on skates for the first time? You know, was it your mom? Was it a neighbor? How'd you get on skates all the way back at 3 years old and want to start playing hockey?
Yeah, it was kind of just watching the Canucks a little bit, and then took a little bit convincing to my dad to let me play hockey. But it was mainly just watching it, and kind of fell in love from there. And, you know, I had a little convincing of my dad. He didn't let me start playing until I passed my skating lessons. So, yeah, definitely was mainly just watching the Canucks on TV.
Now, ironically, we had a guest on recently, Isaiah Mustafa, who's an actor, but also was an NFL player. He played for the Raiders. Coincidentally, your dad might even know him. He played for the Raiders, and he talked about strapping on the skates and falling in love with hockey. I'm just curious, has your dad put the skates on yet?
One time. I don't think he's going back anytime soon, that's for sure, though.
That's one time. Come on now. You have to tell him, when you get drafted, if you go in the first round, that has to be the deal. He has to then go out and skate with you at least one more time.
Yeah. I'll try to convince him to lace him up one more time, but I think he had a bad experience last time. He wasn't able to stand up for too long, so we'll see if we can get them back out there.
Isn't that everybody's experience, though, the first time that they get on? I mean, it takes a while. It's like riding a bike, right? Nobody just grabs a bike and just starts pedaling down the street. It takes a moment or two. Might scuff a few knees along the way.
Yeah, I tried telling him that. He didn't want to listen too much to that one.
Okay. From the National Training Development Program, your most likely destination will be North Dakota. Now, that is one of the premier college hockey programs in the country. When I think of some of the top programs, of course, you think of Boston College, you think of North Dakota, maybe Minnesota. There are a few others in there. Your dad played football. And in North Dakota ties to the program. Just how did you eventually land on North Dakota? Why North Dakota? You went to several different schools and checked out several different programs before ultimately committing. What drove you to North Dakota?
Yeah, got a great coach out there, Brad Berry and Dane Jackson and Carl. They definitely made me going on that visit and made me feel at home. I think the biggest thing was my parents felt comfortable with them, and that definitely made the decision a lot easier. They definitely made it seem like I was a part of their family, and they made it look like they actually care about me, which was a relief. It was good to know that if I'm going to go there, it was going to be somewhere where these people are actually going to care about my development, care about me as a person, and that was probably the biggest thing.
Now, we're always looking for connections. Your dad's coach was Gene Murphy, who played and coached for North Dakota football. Did that ever come up in any part of the conversation?
Yeah, it definitely did. We ended up going to the football facility, and my dad had a good talk with one of the coaches there mm-hmm. that I think knew Murphy, and so that was good. That was a good time for my dad. Definitely enjoyed it.
Was that the point that your dad signed off on the program? He was okay with it at that point?
Yeah, for sure.
You mentioned them caring about you, and another fascinating thing about players at your point in the development is the billet process. So I'm assuming that with the development program that you're with a billet family?
Yeah, I am.
Awesome. Now, on the ice, you're a big defenseman, right shot. You're more of a stay-at-home guy with a good first pass. Is that accurate, or you find yourself more as an offensive type defenseman?
I would say I'm a very strong defensive player. I'm really good at closing out gaps. I have a good skating ability, good skating ability, good stick, which really helps with that. But I think I definitely have the offensive upside too. I have good passes. I think I can see the play very well. It's definitely been a work in progress. A little bit of last year was not the greatest, but I definitely worked on it a lot over the summer, and so far this season it seems like it's getting a little bit better. And you know, I think the offensive side is definitely coming a little bit more. But I think a big part of my game is that defensive, hard nose type of player right now. But yeah, the offense side is definitely coming.
Now, I'm assuming that, I mean, of course, you would be thrilled to be selected by any of the 32 National Hockey League clubs. I'm assuming that the Kings, because of your dad's ties to Southern California, or the Canucks, as you mentioned earlier, might be the two teams that you would most enjoy being selected by. But was there another team or maybe even teams that growing up you've been a fan of, you know, in the NHL?
No, I was mainly just like a Canucks fan, and then, you know, watching the Kings because of my dad and stuff. But I'm pretty much just like you said, thrilled to have a chance with any team. But yeah, I think growing up was a huge Canucks fan, and a little bit of a Kings fan. Yeah.
So speaking of the Canucks, I would be remiss if I did not ask you this question. In poking around with some different scouts that are out there, obviously a lot of people are talking to you right now in advance of the 2024 NHL draft. And I was told that recently during one of your interviews, you were asked, who is your favorite NHL team? And you answered the Vancouver Canucks. And of course, you weren't talking to the Canucks at the time. I would have to consider that a faux pas. How about you?
I was just trying to answer all of the questions pretty truthfully, and I think that one slipped out a little bit. Maybe I should have should have stuck with the team I was interviewing with. But it's just caught a little bit off guard. Just trying to focus on answering the question truthfully, and that one slipped out a little bit.
So what happened in my mind in the room right then? It's like the Southwest Airlines commercial. Want to get away? What was it like in the room immediately following with that slipping out? What happened? I'm assuming they called you on it.
Yeah, it's just a couple of chuckles, and then laughed a little bit and told me I should have said them, and I said, oh, you guys too.
Yes, I love you too, right? It's a little late at that point, though.
Yeah, I think it is a little bit late, but I'll try not making that mistake anymore.
Yes, when you get to the combine, a couple of weeks before the draft, you need to be prepared for that question. What was the most difficult? That was the most difficult question, but what was the most difficult question that you've been asked so far during the interview process? Have you gotten to that point of the process where scouts are asking random questions like if you were in the forest, what one thing could you not live without? Or, if you had a knife and chewing gum, which would you use first? Or, those sorts of weird questions.
No, I haven't quite got to that part yet, but, we had some tough questions just about, I think the only question I can think of was, it wasn't really a super tough question, but it's kind of, out of the blue, they just wanted me to name the past four Stanley Cup winners. I wasn't expecting to be answering that one, but that's only like out of the blue question I can really think of.
How'd you do? Did you go 4 for 4 or did you miss one?
I don't know how, but my brain totally forgot about Tampa going back.
Okay, yeah, so now you've offended two franchises already. So so the 32 is now down to 30. Of potential suitors.
I was going Vegas and then Colorado, and then I don't know why my mind slipped and I said St. Louis, but I think I was missing a couple of Tampas there, so
that's okay. The pandemic years really threw everybody off. You had playing in the bubble and then delayed season starts and all sorts of weirdness, so if I was a scout, I would give you a pass on that.
Yeah, it might be one of the better teams ever, but I'll try remembering them from now on.
Yeah, I'm not going to give you a pass, though. If you're in a room full of scouts and they're all wearing their polo shirts with the logo of a team, and they ask what your favorite team is and you name another franchise, that one I'm not going to give you a pass on.
Yeah, I'll have to work on that one, though.
Fair. Now, getting drafted is only really where it first begins. So regardless of which team throws a sweater over you at the draft, most likely there in Vegas, there's still a lot more work to do. You still have to go to North Dakota. You have to play there. Eventually you turn pro. You probably spend some time in the American Hockey League as well. When you think about your path, what is best case scenario? What's your dream in terms of making it to the NHL? Is it something that, you want to be that phenom player that first year after being drafted, there you are, you're inserted into a team, or do you think, it's 3 years away as an example?
Yeah. I try not to think too much about that. It's obviously a marathon, and it's going to take time. And obviously just got to think about everyday life, every day, just getting better every day, learning to become that type of player. The end goal is to make the Hall of Fame, and that's a long way away, and a lot of work that needs to go into it. So, yeah.
Wait a minute. Did you just say that your ultimate dream is to make the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, growing up, you uh, you dream of being the best player you can be, and just seeing all those people being inducted into the Hall of Fame, that's definitely the end goal.
I have to give you a lot of credit here, EJ. There are not a lot of players that talk like that. Most guys these days just spit a lot of cliches, right? It would be an honor to be drafted. You know, there's a lot of hard work that I still have left to do. You're putting it out there right now. So you're committed. You want to be one of the best.
Yeah, I think with everything I do, I want to be the best. And I think it's that competitive side that I grew up with, and everything I did, I was just, I don't really want to go out there and not try to be the best player. I don't want to just not be the best person. I want to be the best, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, first things first then. So, let's clip this. We'll send it to you. I need you to hold it near and dear to your heart. So 20 years from now, when you are inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, make sure that you, give a shout out to Kings of the Podcast for buying stock early in EJ Emery and having you on prior to even being drafted. That would be important. Here's my final question though. You're drafted. Let's fast forward to the end of next June. You're in Las Vegas. Your parents are there. A team calls you up. You're selected. You're thrilled. It's wonderful. You've achieved one of your early dreams. Later that evening, you probably will be out to dinner with your parents, and you turn to mom and dad, and beyond thank you, what do you say to them?
I think that's definitely we did it. It was, you know, they put in a lot of their hard earned time. They put in a lot of their money, and, you know, I don't know if I can be as thankful as they deserve. And, you know, I'm just so blessed for everything they've done to me, done for me. It's crazy. They've done a lot. You know, mom driving me to practice when it's far away, or when it's late at night, early in the morning, and maybe dad picking up a couple extra shifts just to buy me the extra hockey stick. Yeah, it's definitely, I think that's a lot of their day too. I think a lot of people say it's their day, game draft and all, but I think it's definitely one of my parents' day too, because without them, none of this is possible. And
let's sneak in one more funny one then also, because that was a very emotional answer, so thank you for that. But we want to leave people laughing, maybe yeah. Not leave them in tears, all choked up. Because you're a dreamer. You're a big thinker here. So you're going to get a bunch of texts that day. One might even be for me. You're going to get a lot of text messages that day congratulating you and, you know, welcoming you to the NHL, et cetera. Who is one player that if they were to text you, you would really be blown away and just overly excited if one player texted you and said, you know, congratulations on being drafted?
I think I got to go for every young defenseman's dream, which is, you know, Cale Makar right now. I think getting texted by him would absolutely blow me away. I think that would be super exciting. You know, I don't get too starstruck with people, but a text from him would definitely blow me out of the park.
All right. Well, I look forward to the follow-up conversation and whatever it is, 8 months or so from now. Seems like you have a really good head on your shoulders. Tonight or later today, be sure to tell your parents they've done a good job raising you. Enjoy your time with the National Training Development Program. It's always fun to connect with kids at the program. Big things are ahead for you, EJ. It's been a lot of fun having you on Kings of the Podcast. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, I appreciate it so much. Thank you for having me.
All right, there you go. EJ Emery, you'll be hearing a lot more about him at the draft. We'll be back after the break. We'll talk more LA Kings hockey. Dreams in her head and very little money in her hands. Some are black and some are white, and they ain't too proud to sleep on the floor tonight. The blind faith in Jesus, you know that they just might. Rockin' in the USA. Hey!
Welcome back to the third period of Kings of the Podcast with DB and the Mayor.
All right, welcome back, Kings of the Podcast, third period. Dennis Bernstein, you hear me say this type of thing all the time, but wow, what an impressive young player EJ Emery is. Just a very enjoyable conversation.
Absolutely. Great job with him.
I do want to clarify. Thank you, by the way. I want to clarify one thing. The question that I asked him, I probably didn't set it up properly for some of the listeners. He was in a room with NHL scouts, scouts from an NHL team, and they were all wearing the logo of their team on their polo shirts. And they asked him, who's your favorite NHL team? And that's when he said the other one. So it wasn't just that he was being interviewed. He was being interviewed by a team when he said that. And whoops, little slip up on his part, being in a room with the non-Canucks team. And when that team asked him, who is your favorite NHL team? All he had to do was stare at the 12 polo shirts in the room, and he could have picked the right team, and instead he said the Canucks. So an honest moment, and I loved the way he answered the question. So kudos to EJ Emery, and really looking forward, Dennis, to staying connected with him throughout the season and watching his development and seeing where he goes. You know, he's kind of, I mean, projections are projections at this point. We're 7 months away, but Dennis, he's kind of a, I'm going to call it a 12 to 20. 12 is probably too high.
Okay.
15 to 20, 15 to 22, mm-hmm. call him a mid. The Kings are hoping to select, you know, much later than that this year. So what I'm saying is I'm not sure he's going to be there when the LA Kings select at the end of the first round. But wow, can you imagine with his ties and his dad being from Compton and that whole thing? It really would be great. But I always come back to the 2010 draft. When Dean Lombardi moved up three spots, everybody thought it was to take Emerson Edom, the local kid. And he didn't shock the world, but he certainly shocked the 10,000 in attendance that day by taking Derek Forbert instead of taking Emerson Edom. It all worked out, of course. But what I'm getting at is emotions and sentiment and media stories don't play well on draft day when you're at the draft table. We love that stuff.
At the table.
The scouts really don't care.
They do not. They don't care. They don't care. It's a great narrative. He will come home and play. No.
They're not drafting a guy, especially in the first round, for narrative. No.
Exactly.
They are not. Okay, moving along. Let's get back to the LA Kings in the present form. As we get here to the end of November and turn the page into December, the Kings have one game remaining on the schedule at home in the month of November. That's the game coming up on the 29th against the visiting Washington Capitals, and then they go out on a road trip for four games. What can you say about Ovechkin at this point, Dennis, that hasn't already been said throughout his career? Certainly a Hall of Famer. He's chasing down Gretzky.
Yep.
However, this Washington Capitals team, fair to say, not as potent as they once were, DB?
No. But they're winning games, John. They're winning close games at this point in time. They're 10-5-2 through 17 before I think they play tonight. Yeah, they're in San Jose tonight on Monday. But that's kind of stunning. But yeah, John, if you look at the team with respect to goals scored, I think they're next to last. So a team with Alexander Ovechkin is next to last. And you mentioned there's some teams that have played less. Look, no team's going to score less than San Jose. We get it. Okay. So it's a race for the other 31.
I don't know. But keep winning though, Dennis. The Sharks.
It's not. I know. They were tough the other night. But the fact that they have 43 goals in 17 games, it's less about Ovi, who's had a slow start. It's all the other guys. Look, Matt Backstrom's not playing. Kuznetsov's not what he once was. Tom Wilson's really not been productive. So they're winning games by getting great goaltending, believe it or not, which is not what you thought of Washington. You think of, when you think of the Caps, you think of Ovechkin and Oshie and all the other guys. John Carlson, you think this is a high-scoring team. This is the opposite. So I think that their pattern or their strategy to beat LA is probably try to get them into a 3-2-2-1 game, which is hard to do right now against this team.
Yeah, I just looked it up while you were talking there. Bottom five teams in terms of goals scored, goals for, would be the Islanders, Blackhawks, Capitals, and the Sharks. The Sharks have scored 34 goals, and you're right, the Capitals, second worst in the league, only producing 43 goals. And then if you go up to the top of the board, near the top of the board, I would say that's where you're going to find the LA Kings. Yeah. It goes Vancouver starting number one, Tampa second, and the Kings third. So the Kings have scored 76 goals. That's a lot, Dennis. That's a lot of goals. That's a big, you talk about goal differential. That's a big goal differential from where the Capitals are sitting up to where the LA Kings are. However,
it's almost double. Yeah,
it is. However, that's why they play the games, Dennis. That's why the Sharks were able to sneak out a win the other night. Things happen. There's all sorts of factors. There's travel. There's back-to-backs. There's guys being injured. There's shuffling. There's goaltending matchups. So it still is a very special thing. Just like when Sidney Crosby came to town a few weeks ago, it still is a big deal when Alexander Ovechkin comes to Los Angeles. He only comes once a year. He'll be here on Wednesday the 29th. So that is yet another big game for the LA Kings. And especially you want to leave town on a high note. The Kings have been playing well, winners of five straight. Yep. Want to get another victory under their belt before they go out on the road for those four games where they will see the Habs again. They'll also get the chance to see the Blue Jackets. But let's talk about goaltending.
Sure.
Phoenix Copley was able to get two starts last week.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, the way the schedule sets up here, I'm not sure when his next start is going to be because they're playing on Wednesday, as I said.
Right.
And then they go Sunday, which is their first game away, and then they go Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So they don't have any back-to-backs. You theoretically could play Talbot in every one of those games. I mean, what do you do? If you're going to give Copley a start, when is it? Is it the game against the Habs again, this time in Montreal? What do you do with Phoenix Copley at this point when you look at the schedule is what I'm asking.
Well, Sunday's game is home against Colorado.
I'm so sorry. I keep thinking that game is on the road for some reason, but you're right. That is a home
game. We're going to do a two-for-one. Rams-Browns for a couple of hours, and then Kings-Avalanche. So we're going to drive up to 110.
How long do you think that's going to take you to get from SoFi to Staples? That's probably a good
shorter
two
than
hours.
It would take me to get to Ontario, I tell you that much.
Oh, it's a little early, but okay.
Okay, so I'm looking at the schedule. I think the next game for Talbot, for Copley would be Saturday against the Islanders, right? I assume he would play Washington, Colorado, you want him to play. Maybe give him the Columbus game. Okay. And here's the thing, John, and I brought this up before. The team, potentially, when you look at who they're playing on the road, I know people are going to go crazy with the jinx. This team stands to set the NHL record for a road start. They've got Columbus, Montreal, New York, Islanders. The Ranger game will be very, very tough. I would think Islanders, let me put it to you this way. The next four after Washington, I would split those four games. So I would give Talbot Colorado and Montreal and give Copley Columbus and the Islanders.
So the next four games you would split.
After Washington. So yes, I would split them because those teams don't score goals.
Yeah, I think you have to give Talbot the start against Washington only because he only played one game last week, and this would be the one game that he's going to play this week. So he's getting plenty of rest during this stretch, at least, Dennis. So that would be pretty interesting. So you're saying Columbus and the Islanders would be your okay? So that means that Copley would not see the Canadiens again. Copley would see the Blue Jackets and the Islanders.
Yeah, that's what I do. I would play Talbot, Washington, Colorado, and then start alternating Columbus, Montreal, Islanders from there.
Yeah, it's interesting because the way the schedule lines up, you're probably right. When I was looking at matchups, I was thinking the game to give Copley would have been the Canadiens.
But
the problem is if you give him the Canadiens game, then you also give him the Islanders game because it's the first of the back-to-back.
Back-to-back.
Which means that Talbot plays on Tuesday against the Blue Jackets and then doesn't play again until Sunday against the Rangers. And you probably want him playing the Thursday game.
Yep.
Before the Ranger game, just to keep him fresh, because that Ranger game is going to be such a big one, which means that he would get the Canadiens game. So could be interesting, and you might be onto something there. Then again, Todd could just he could roll off and go Colorado, and then give Talbot three of the four games on the road trip. So
you could. I the last two games by Copley, I have more confidence in him, so I'd like to get him more starts at this point. And the schedule has been really friendly. You mentioned all the rest they've had, and that's coming to an end. I just think the way Copley's played, he just looks better in net. He looks more confident. His footwork was better in the last two games. I don't know what that was prior to that, but certainly they must have sat him down, went over a lot of video with him and Mike Buckley, and it looks like he's corrected some of the stuff. So I feel more confident. And again, John, the strength of schedule, you can get away with it. Like, these are winnable games regardless of who's in net. But my question to you is, Is 32 going to play against the Kings on the 10th at the Garden?
You know, I mean, it's the million-dollar question. We talked just a moment ago about scouts and not looking at, you know, sentimental things or narrative, and coaches tend to be the same way. When it comes to goaltending, Dennis, like if it's another player and you're just putting a guy on a fourth line or something, that's one thing. But now you're talking about the goaltending, which is such a vital position. Then again, you look at the way that Quickie's playing, man, that's, I'm going to say yes. I mean, you have to, Dennis, you have to play him.
And here's why, John, they play as well as the Kings play back to back on Saturday. So do they. So you could play Shesterkin in Washington on Saturday and come back with Quick on Sunday against the Kings. And I got to think that's going to happen.
Well, you would think so, because to them, the Washington game is probably the more important game,
yeah,
even though
right.
the Kings game is at home.
Right.
You know, when you look
conference
at
conference game. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you look at it from that perspective, the Washington game is more important to them. And boy, wouldn't that be amazing? You're talking about two pretty emotional games that are going to happen back to back. The Kings are going to play the Rangers. Obviously, the Quick one is, you know, a thousand times more, but they come home and they get Gabe Vilardi and the Winnipeg Jets and Dubois. Now, we know what Dubois did going to Winnipeg, but now the Jets are coming to, you know, to his turf.
Sure. Sure.
So those two games, the Ranger game and then the game against Winnipeg, I think those are going to be pretty emotional games for the players.
Agreed.
Alex Iafallo also returning. I don't just want to make it the Gabe Vilardi game, because Alex Iafallo will be returning.
Oh, yeah, and he's been the healthy one. He's been productive. So you mentioned goaltending, John. John, would you give Cam Talbot an extension, $5 million over 2 years? So $2.5 million for the next two seasons.
Oh, $5 million total. Okay.
$5 million total. $2.5 million.
When you first said $5 million, I was thinking $5 million AAV, but you're talking $2.5 million.
$2.5 million.
Five over two for 2 years. The second year of that deal is the one that makes me nervous. Probably. I know that's a weak answer. I'm not opposed to it. I'm not totally thrilled by it. If you're asking me today, I'd rather say, you know, wait 60 days. What's the urgency? What's the rush? You know, you don't really have.
Well, if I'm Cam's agent, I'm pushing for it, right?
Sure. Well, why wouldn't you be
right now?
I mean, of course. Hey, look, you know, we took $1 million. We came here. We did everything you've asked of us. And, you know, look at the numbers that we're putting up. You know, I don't expect him to be the starter over the next 2 years, but certainly have a lot of confidence in his ability to be in a tandem with somebody else. It's an interesting point, Dennis, because you don't want to go back to the well and continue to try to find goalies at the $1 to $1.5 million mark.
Right.
And two and a half is not that big of a number. Part of the problem, though, is the bonus part of it. What's the bonus money underneath that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how much of that would they have to eat if they had to, you know, if it didn't work out?
Right. Right.
That feels very much, though, like a Rob Blake type of deal where you try to get in early and kind of hedge a bet against the future.
Mm-hmm.
And look, certainly he's comfortable playing for Todd McClellan again, and certainly he's done everything that's asked of him. So 2.5, I'm going to say maybe. I'm more in the yes camp. I'm not opposed to it. I'm not going to lose sleep over it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not slamming my fist on the table and saying that this has to get done today. Where would you stand on that?
Well, if you're going to quote unquote improve or pay more for that position next season, because you're right, this can't go on. I think you and I have both talked to Rob privately. This is a one-off, right? You're not going to have $2.5 million in net next season. I want to know who the 1A would be. Like, where are you going to go get the guy that's better than this guy right now? And frankly, I don't see it. Like if Demko had stayed hurt, then maybe he would have squeezed him out of Vancouver. But I don't see the goal you would go get, John. And again, we're so far away from free agency or talking about offseason trades. I don't see the guy saying the guy would have been Hellebuck, right? But he re-signed in Winnipeg. Like, what's going to happen in Boston? One of those two goalies got to go. But again, if the Kings gonna have a really good team, how are you gonna make that trade? Right? Well, who are you gonna offload for that? So I think at this point, it's a nice insurance policy. Yeah, sure, you want to wait maybe another 20 games, but I don't think the ask is not unreasonable. Let's put it that way.
That's a fair statement. The ask is not unreasonable. You mentioned Boston. You also have to figure out what's going on there in Nashville, and you don't know which direction that's going to go. I know that publicly right now they're saying that they want to hold, but you know, anything can change over 60 days.
Right.
I don't have the answer to your question as we sit here today of
right.
where are you going to go. In terms of the 1A, the situation presents itself. It will, you know, it will develop
100%.
In the coming months. But I like what you just said, and that is, it's not an unreasonable ask. I would agree with you. It is not an unreasonable ask. And so I guess that's why I felt the way that I did, which is, I'm not opposed to it. If that's what it took, you know, you do it and it's insurance and I'm okay with it. Largely, like you said, I guess, because the other situation has not presented itself. And you're going to need a backup. You're going to need a 1B. And hell, the way he's playing, he might be the 1A. As crazy as that sounded, you know, 90 days ago.
For sure.
He's doing everything that he needs to do at this particular point. Are you happy with the way that the lines are settling in? Are you happy with the way that the defense is settling in? Any complaints at this point, Dennis,
before
head into the next stretch of games?
No, 13-3-3, I'm not going to complain. And I just – Spence is looking a lot more comfortable on the power play, which he looks really good there. And that pair, you know, you don't really lose much, John, with England and Spence out there. You really don't. And I think you and I looked at each other at the beginning of the season like, okay, how's this going to work out, right? Mm-hmm. And it's worked out great. Joe, when you're 13-3-3, a lot of things work out. So the comfortable with the lines, yeah. I like Fiala with Moore and Deneau. I do. I think that makes a lot more sense because Kevin needs the puck, and Jimmy Fox has brought this up on the broadcast. Fiala and Dubois both need the puck. And if they're on the same line, it's not going to happen. And just the high IQ of Phil and Trevor on that line, I think that's a really, really good line. Here's the big question, John. When Artie comes back, when Arvidsson comes back, then what do you do? Like, that's going to be a great problem to have. But where do you fit this guy now? He you need him on the power play without question. I think you had the solution. Did you? Oh, maybe it was Foxy. Foxy said, put him on the power play and put him on the fourth line if Arvidsson comes back. So maybe that's at the cost of a fair air, but it's teams better watch out. If Arvidsson comes back healthy, it's going to be really, really interesting at this point. But yeah, what's the complaint when you're 13-3-3? This team has really righted the ship. And you mentioned, John, it's not just about the goal scoring. They don't give up much defensively. To me, that's a bigger surprise because you saw the talent on the team. Okay, if these guys are all clicking, they can score goals. But the way they're shutting teams down, that to me, it's even a bigger surprise through 19 games.
Yeah, I keep beating this drum, Dennis. To me, re-signing Gavrikov was just as important as anything else they did over the summer because it really solidified this defensive group.
100%.
And last year, with all respect to Durzi and Walker and everybody else, they were trying to put something together with tape and chewing gum and make it work and guys playing the wrong side and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has settled down into their natural positions, where they're most comfortable, where they're most productive. And again, that's not a knock on the players that were here.
Absolutely not.
The coaching staff was trying to put it together based upon the pieces that they have. And they just have different pieces now that fit the puzzle better. And Gavrikov and Roy together is just, it's ideal. And I think the bigger question, you know, you talk about Arvidsson, and yes, it's a good problem to have. You're probably not going to have to cross that bridge until February-ish would be my guess. We could start having the conversation more in January. When that happens, Laffey does probably have to go down just from a cap standpoint. Everything will sort of revert back to where it was coming into the season. Yeah, they only have room for 21 players pretty much. And so they carry a seventh defenseman, which means they would only have room for 12 forwards. And so Laffey would have to go down. That's the most obvious answer to that question.
Right.
But what about this? What do you do heading into next year with Brant Clark and getting him in? What's going to happen with Matt Roy? You know, Matt Roy is heading towards unrestricted free agency. Those conversations will start to pick up soon about what type. You mentioned earlier perhaps what a contract would look like for Cam Talbot. What's a contract going to look like for Matt Roy? And is that something that the Kings would be willing to entertain? Because if not, even if you let it go till the end of the year and then you let him walk, now you still have to answer, how are you going to piece all of that together? Because do you really want to go Doughty Clark Spence or Doughty Spence Clark? Mm-hmm. Do you really want three offensive minded defensemen? It's a great problem to have, of course, but it's Arvidsson is not the only piece to the puzzle, is what I'm saying there, Dennis. Yeah. There's something to work out there with Matt Roy and Brant Clark, who, by the way, just continues to be a point per game player down in the American Hockey League. And let's give a little credit to the Ontario Reign right now. They're on quite a roll, Dennis. They're beating everybody. They've knocked off some of the heavy hitters. And Sammy Fagamo, I don't know if you've paid attention to any of my tweets recently, Dennis, but he is on an absolute tear. Yeah, I know it's a small sample size of six games, but what is he up to? 9 goals in 6 games or something similar to that. It's pretty ridiculous what he's doing down there.
Yeah. Back to Matt Roy for a second. It's going to be tricky because he's at a 3.1 cap hit. He's not going to be signed for 3.1. He's a $5 million player. I don't think they can afford that.
You can't give him $5 million when you look at what they gave Mikey, though.
Yep. Yep. He's going to price himself out. Some team's going to give him $5 million a year for, what is he, 28 for 4 years. So,
yeah.
But we'll find out, John, because after January 1, then you can have those conversations. I think he's pricing himself out, which is unfortunate for the team, but you do have Brant Clark sitting there in Ontario. And the question is, they would be a different looking team, but here's the thing, if we're really projecting far out, I think he'd get enough defensive help, Brant Clark, if he's playing with Gavrikov. So he'd have cover there.
So you mentioned what that number would look like, and I'm just going to throw this out there. Mikey Anderson, I believe, is at $4.1 million, so four and a quarter
correct.
At the most.
Yeah, four and a quarter.
So he's just 4.1. Over four. That's your benchmark because, you're not going to look to pay Matt Roy more money than Mikey Anderson. I mean, at least not in my mind. Now, granted, Mikey did sign a much longer-term deal. He signed a max-term deal there, so we'll see where it all goes. Dennis, another fantastic program. The LA Kings have a lot ahead. No complaints from you, so that's good.
No.
The Kings are playing well. Todd must be happy. And Alex Ovechkin rolling into town on Wednesday, and we'll see where things go from there.
The cult of personality. I know your anger, I know your dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm the cult of personality. Like Mussolini and Kennedy. I'm the cult of personality. The cult of personality, the cult of personality. Me. I tell you.